What?
You married it.
That's right, reader, I did.
So.
Reader, I married it.
You're stuck with it. In all its glory.
On this episode of The Freenoter, we talk about how to adapt your stage content when there are no stages.
And we'll look at how a great stage speaker, Vin Jiang, has made the transition from stage to screen.
And we ring in the transition from spring to summer with one of our favorite warm weather cocktails, the mojito, with our Antiguan twist.
All that and more on this episode of The Freenoter. Hello, Tamsin.
Hello, Tom.
It's so lovely to talk to you again.
That's all we do now.
That is all we do. This is our life now.
Since we don't talk to audiences.
No.
At least not in person.
You know what I miss?
What do you miss, babe?
Place.
Place, yeah.
I miss place. For those of you who listen to this in a time capsule in the year 2060, because our words will endure, we are still in quarantine of the great COVID-19 pandemic of 2020.
That's true.
And last week we introduced a brand new segment on the Freenoter, which we called the COVID Cabana.
The COVID Cabana. I still love that.
I love the COVID Cabana.
The COVID Cabana. Right. And what was the point of the COVID Cabana? Remind us all, Tom.
Yes. The COVID Cabana was a chance to take the topic for the week, whatever aspect of freenoting and speaking to build your business that we were talking about that week, and adapting it to the virtual stage, a little special segment. But, you know, this week I thought we would spend the entire evening in the COVID Cabana.
Well, it's a good place.
It's a good place, yeah.
Are there showgirls?
There are showgirls.
Showboys?
There's non-gendered one named
show
Lola.
People.
One named Lola. She was a showgirl.
Yep.
I think it was the hottest club north of Havana, as I recall. But we're going to spend this entire episode in the COVID Cabana and talk about adapting your content to the virtual stage, because as we speak to you now, it's mid-May 2020. I don't think there are going to be any large conferences this year.
No. It'll be interesting. I mean, I think because we're in North America and we're in a state that was early to close and slow to open, we are seeing other states open sooner. And so I had a back and forth with some friends of mine today, the She-Noters, as we like to call ourselves.
Ooh, that's a new show.
Yes. So that's me, Tammy Evans, Neen James, and Aaron Gargan King. And Aaron was saying that she's got a show in person in August. And she was wondering, like, is that still going to happen? And what's happening with all that? And I was like, oh, I don't have any till the, oh, wait a minute. I have a show in Denver in August, but I haven't heard from them yet. I mean, we've been proactive and asking folks, but been definitely a wait and see, but Colorado's an early open state. Massachusetts is not, and none of this solves the problem of what happens if I have to quarantine when I come back, which is a whole other kettle of fish, as they say.
It is, and a kettle of fish stinks.
Yeah, that would stink.
That would stink.
Yeah, going to do a gig and then having to quarantine back home for 2 weeks without seeing you or my kids. Yeah, that would not be good.
Yes, I and your kids would not be delighted at that. I've got two in-person events scheduled for this year. One in October.
Yeah.
That was moved from the summer.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And one in Lisbon, Portugal, that was moved to December, which was actually supposed to be at the end of March.
Yeah.
And I'm cautiously optimistic about that.
Yeah. I mean, I have some in late September, October, November. Most of those are things that had been pushed, or they were just late dates that just didn't get rescheduled or postponed when everything first started to happen. But what's interesting is I think that some of the content that I've developed since all of this started is actually what I'm going to take to the stage, because I think that the appetite for content right now is a little different. And so I'm curious because Edison's been doing a series of webinars.
Yeah.
And because speaking was, as a freenoter and teenoter and keynoter, I mean, speaking really was one of my main channels for marketing. The thing that I've been doing is doing kind of free webinars to get content out there, but also to commit to digital tape, right? And you know, digital memory, some of these things that I have always talked to my clients about, but I've never captured. Like, you know, I've done one now on, you know, how to pressure test your message, and another on, you know, how to build a conversational case for your idea. And then I just did one this week on how to storyboard your content. Because when we first started to do this, and I did some of these things virtually, I was doing things that were much more like my normal keynote style, and I just found that it didn't work as well. Seemed to work much better was something much, much more tactical. So I'm curious what you have seen, and what your switch, just even in topics, is that one of the big, that's been one of my big switches, switching topics to much more tactical topics. What's been the Edison approach?
Yeah, I mean, we've added a bit more content. I've done webinars with Edison since 2005. So, you know, that's legit 15 years of webinars back when they used to be done really with a fax machine and a tin can. But now, of course, we have better platforms. So, I mean, we've had flagship virtual presentations. You know, the Infinite Dial is a big pillar for us. The Smart Audio Report is a big pillar for us. And, you know, we continue to do those. We've added some, I guess, interstitial content in the form of a lunchtime webinar series, and we're putting out new research and new content around that every 2 weeks right now. And it's been unusual, I think, because I think what we have seen in the webinars to date, we're seeing more people who have signed up show up at them.
Hmm.
And at first, I was like really excited by that. I'm thinking, oh, you know, people really need something to do and something to look at, and they're bored and they miss their colleagues. But then I thought about it a little bit more, and especially with Infinite Dial, you know, that's a big annual presentation for us. And often one person at an agency will sign up for that. And that one person will represent like 30 people in a conference room at that agency. Well, that conference room is now empty. So it doesn't surprise me in that sense why we've had like more actual attendees, but I think it's probably a wash.
Yeah. Well, my question was about the content though. I mean, so it's interesting to see the behaviors change, but what has been the thinking around what to present? So I love the fact that you're doing it more often and you're looking at it from that perspective, but what's guided, because I think other people are asking this for themselves in their own speaking, and you know, particularly the freenoters out there. Hey, freenoters. What's been some of the thought process about what to present differently?
Yeah, I think the first conversation that we had about this, because I mean, the Infinite Dial is always an hour. Shortly after that, we did a webinar. Our president, Larry Rosen, did one on some election data. And as he was going through it, he said, you know, I think this is only a 20-minute webinar. And we talked about it. And at that point, we were like, I think that's fine.
Mm.
I think 15 minutes is fine. I think 10 minutes is fine. I think there's a lot of screen fatigue. And so I think the first thing that we rethought was the amount of content that we needed to turn on the mic.
Yeah.
As long as it's impactful content and useful content, and for us, it's always original research, I think we haven't lowered the bar on quality or lowered the bar on the impact of the research, but I think what we have abandoned is the thought that we needed, like, you know, 50 slides or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is actually something that's come up with some conversations I've had with some fellow speakers about what I'm calling the quarantine-y talks, and kind of on a length standpoint, that's what you've observed is something I've seen actually several other speakers observe as well, which is there's something right now magical about 20 minutes of content. And what's so interesting for me as someone who has spent a lot of time now generating and helping folks generate 20 minutes of content in the form of TED and TEDx talks, that's a really hard time frame for a lot of folks to structure, because that's actually not how their keynotes are built. Their keynotes are built as 45 or 60 minutes. And so it's been interesting to start to play around with that, so that it's not just, okay, what is it that's, you know, how can you change what you're talking about? So I'm a big, we've talked about this before, I'm a big believer, not in changing like who you are and what your big idea is, like what it is that you represent. But from a content standpoint, what I found useful is to focus on angles of that are much more tactical and applicable, because those are are more consistent with what people are doing when they're watching, right? Mm-hmm. They're not sitting in a big ballroom anymore and having this event experience where they're going to collect a whole bunch of ideas and there's still a travel home and all of this other stuff. And then their brains will sift through all of this. I mean, they're at their dining table, right? Or maybe it's a home office. There's, you know, there's kids and dogs and spouses and whatever in the background. They want something to justify the time they just spent with you, right? And so that shift to what angle on your idea can you give people that's super, super actionable, right? So it may be actually your last 20 minutes of your talk in certain ways would be really interesting. But there's also, I'm really fascinated by this 20-minute thing and how well or not I think people are set up to do that, because I agree. I think there's something magical about 20 minutes of content and shrinking that down.
Yeah, I mean, we're so used to doing a big show when we do a webinar or a virtual presentation. You know, we've got Infinite Dial Canada coming out in about a week and a half, which I'll be co-presenting with Stephanie Donovan from Triton. And, you know, that's gone from an hour keynote at Canadian Music Week to, I think we're going to wrap that up in 25 minutes.
Interesting, yeah.
And I think we're going to do that because, A, we're being even more judicious than normal about the number of slides that are going in.
Yeah.
Because people are just, you know, they're looking at screens so much that we just can't have slide after slide after slide after slide. You know, we've got to give pauses. We've got to give visual contrast. So I think we're holding our content to an even higher bar than normal.
So what are some of the thought processes that are going through, like what you leave out? Because when you go from 25 minutes to, you know, from 60 minutes to 25 minutes, you're cutting a bunch of slides, what's your standard and what's the thought process for what stays in?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're trying to hit the pillars, the real currency metrics of the types of things that we report on. And then we also have lots of ancillary questions and you know, kind of color to fill in the details. And I think what we have decided to do with that is to hold that out for other content. So to hold some of those other details out. For instance, we are holding back 100 slides from the online portion of the Infinite Dial US. We haven't even released those yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to come out. They may not come out in a webinar. They might come out in a Medium post. They might come out in something else. Because we don't have speaking as a marketing channel anymore.
Yeah, yeah, right. And what you're suggesting, I think, is it builds a little bit on what we were talking about last week with that reserve power, or last time we were talking about like reserve power, what you hold back for a Q&A. I think a lot of that same thinking can apply now to how do you shape and structure your online content differently. And one of our friends, fellow speakers, a gentleman by the name of Brant Christopher Mensoir, he's really been experimenting with this, and it's I've loved following what he's found. And what he basically did is he took his 60-minute keynote and he's now broken it into 3 20-minute presentations. And that's what he's offering his clients and audiences. And what that allows him to do is to assign work in between. So talk about this idea of tailoring your content for the environment, right? You've got people sitting at their desks really wanting to do something actionable. What he's doing is really allowing that to happen by presenting 20 minutes of content, giving them something to do, picking up the next time with, you know, answering those questions and then delivering another 20 minutes of content. I just think that's that's an ingenious way, kind of at the top level, to say, oh my gosh, I had a 45-minute or a 60-minute presentation. What do I do now? One of the ways to do it is to split it into some of those natural acts that most talks should have, right? It's like, let's spend the first part of it talking about what's the context, what are we trying to accomplish, why are we trying to accomplish it, and kind of what's the chief problem. Like, that would be a good first 20 minutes. You know, a good 20, you know, second 20 minutes is, all right, let's really dive into that problem. What's driving it? What are some of the new things we need to understand in order to really decide on what's that new challenge, what's that new change that we can make? That's a great middle section. And then your last one could be like, okay, so actually, how do you do that? And I think when you're free noting or T&E noting to drive follow-on conversations or follow-on products and services or productized services, that's a really smart way to do it, because you're leading people right up to the point where you could do a much more in-depth kind of workshop or that kind of thing. And so I think there's really interesting ways to either reduce the amount of content straight off and or split it so that you're creating essentially multiple mini pieces that taken all together are a really effective program.
You know, that really, I think, gives me an idea about, I just had a brainstorm.
Did you have a brainstorm?
I did. You know, because really, let's come back to the freenoter who we're really talking to here, the people who speak to build their business. Stages have been taken away.
Yep.
And so that means an important marketing channel has been taken away.
Zip, zap, gone.
Zip, zap, gone, right? Yeah, zip, zap, gone. That was a kid show that I watched in the
70s. Was it really?
No.
But this is why you keep me around, because I believe you.
That's not why I keep you around. But since that channel has been taken away, and we now have to get creative about how we market ourselves, right? I just don't think another like 1 hour webinar is going to do it. And I, you know, the way that a freenoter will typically operate is they'll give, they'll have one core speech maybe, right?
Yeah.
And that's a big rock, and you throw that rock into an event and you get ripples.
Yep.
And those ripples are leads and interested parties, and maybe they'll convert in 3 months. Maybe they'll convert in 6 months, just like, you know, the ripples kind of radiating from it. And then you throw a rock into the next event and you get ripples. And that's sort of the life of the freenoter.
Absolutely.
That's
how it works.
We don't have big rocks and ripples anymore.
No, we don't.
But we could think of it as
the creek bed is dry.
Well, but we could think of it as a lazy river.
Oh.
And the lazy river part.
I like those.
I love lazy rivers because number one, lazy.
Lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, lazy. But the lazy river analogy really is that if you have this like big rock that you throw in, and those ripples are, you know, maybe follow-up content that you deliver to prospects and so on, maybe instead you structure your quote-unquote speaking channel just like you would a drip campaign in email.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
You have a 10-minute introduction. If you like that, here's the next thing to go to. If you like that, here's the next thing to go to. And you tell a story, but not all at once.
Yeah.
And you just sort of drip it out, and you leave those breadcrumbs very visible and apparent for people to find, so that by the time they get to the, you know, they've done a circuit around the lazy river, you and they will know if there is a business transaction to be had. But it's less about that big rock and like hope.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, one of the ways I describe this in when I'm working with clients, just on their messaging, and how do you, like, if you're structuring a pitch, for instance, and it's a particularly technical product or service or whatever, the way that I often describe it is that people need to hear right out of the gate, they need to hear that overview, right? They need to hear something in 60 or 90 seconds that summarizes the whole thing. And the analogy I give is like when you type in an address into Google Maps or something, and you get that first shot, right? That's the overview. Like, you need that. And that to me is like that first piece. Like, let me just show you the route. Interested in the route? Great. The next one, let's click down further. All right. Then we're going to, you know, get to a different level of resolution. Next one, different level of resolution. And then you can start to split up the steps of that content in a way that really makes sense. I mean, I think that's going to be much more suited to content that's been structured originally on a narrative arc and less on, like, you know, than a talk that's, you know, the kind of talk structure that I'm not a huge fan of, which is like opening, 3 points, close. Because those are, in that sense, people could like take or leave each of the parts. And you want to structure your content so that somebody wants to hear the next piece. And traditionally, we've thought about how to do that within a particular talk. But great narrative structure will work across, like, think of a TV series, right? That's exactly what you're doing. You're thinking of the arc of a season. And so if you can think about your content like that. How would you, my boys and I have been watching like Brooklyn Nine-Nine like fiends right now, like binging it. But if you, like each of those like slightly builds on the other, and each episode is its own thing, but over the arc of a season, people change, different things mm-hmm. happen, there's something that happens. And so I think that's that might be a very useful mental model for folks for thinking about, oh, how would you do that? How do you take this big idea that you have, how do you take the content that you normally talk about and walk people through it? And you're right, you're going to lose people along the way, but the people who are stick with you to the end, those are gold people. Those are like super qualified leads. They've made it through all of those different sieves, and what you've got is truly kind of the finest one, you know, like the absolute best, most qualified people in your funnel.
Which is very similar to a successful email marketing I'm not going to say campaign, but I mean just you know, system.
Effort, yes.
System, yeah. You know, yeah. where the people, you've got the people who will subscribe to get something and then put you into their, you know, shunt you into some secondary folder. You've got the people who will reopen your emails. You've got the people who will move you into a primary folder, yeah. Read all your emails. And there's a place for all of that. But I think if you are a speaker right now who is speaking to build their business, you've got to have other aspects of that marketing funnel in place, and use the speaking parts in shorter, I think, more atomized and powerful and impactful segments as, you know, way stations along the lazy river.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways,
absolutely.
As opposed to like one big talk that will generate a thing.
Right, build a season. I mean, I think we're back to kind of serialized content in a way, and you know, back to like Dickensian era or whatever, where mm-hmm. you know, if you think about how those chapters were structured, because, and you're the English lit major times too, but from what I understand, like folks like Dickens that published in serial magazines, meaning that they published like a chapter at a time because they got paid a chapter at a time, you wrote that chapter with, you know, yes, it had to be satisfying in and of itself, but you wrote it in such a way where you absolutely positively wanted the next piece,
yeah.
The next chapter. And I think that would be, I mean, I know I'm weird about this, but to me, that feels like such a fun puzzle to solve, which is how do you structure your content that way, where you've actually given them a really satisfying, useful, applicable piece of information that helps them solve a problem, like all the things that, you know, make it meet all the free note criteria. And you make it clear that there's a next step, and you have set that up in such a way they're like, oh my gosh, I totally want that. Like, that's the next piece.
Yeah. I mean, and I love the Dickens analogy, because I think number one, like Dickens, if you are speaking to build a business, like Dickens, we all own the magazine.
Yeah.
And number two, like Dickens, we all have about 20 kids.
Well,
and so you got to keep selling them magazines. Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, that's where we all are now, is that we have to figure out how to do that, how to make that content, how do you make that content irresistible, which is the thing that I've talked about for a while, which is both within each piece and how it does it all tie together. How do you think about that? I think we touched a little bit on this last time, but the other thing that I think is useful for folks to think about adapting their content is adapting it so that it's friendly to the pre-curated platforms. Because I continue to think those are going to be more important than ever. And there was a conversation in a group that we're both part of where, you know, somebody was talking about something that's similar to that kind of, you know, masterclass type of thing, you know, great courses. I think we did talk about this last time, but someone was saying, well, you know, TED, for instance, which of course is the gold standard of kind of curated content, but that's mostly like thought leaders, big ideas and all of that. And they're like, well, as long as that's the case, there's going to be a market for something else. And my point was, do you think TED hasn't figured that out? Like, look at what TED is doing right now. TED is doing things right now that are already pivoting to much more actionable content. They're already, the whole system, like not just TED, but all the TEDx organizers, they have a, you know, each one is different, but each of them has a process for how to develop this short form 3 to 18 minute content. And the smart ones are already starting to figure out how are they either going to supplement or substitute content that's much more tactical and much more applicable, again, based on the environment where people are watching and experiencing this content. So I'd say, like, now is the time to, like, seriously start to tune up your network and your connection to things like, to well-curated platforms like that, because that's going to be super important. But all of that brings us back to what makes a great talk in the first place, which is, like, is it relevant? Is it remarkable? You know, does it stand up to what people are talking and thinking about? But I'm really curious about, I think we're going to see a rise. I know I said this a little bit last time, but I think we're going to see a rise in these curated platforms. And that's another way that people can think about how to adapt their content. How can they make it friendly to those environments? And that comes back to making it short.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of virtual events happening, and I'm of two minds on those. You know, on the one hand, they are, for the most part, what we have.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's corporate stuff, certainly, but for the freenoter, that's not as readily available as it is for the professional keynoter. But, you know, a virtual event, you know, and a lot of them that I've seen now are stretched over 4 days, 5 days. Mm. They're selling quantity, not quality. It's a low ticket price. I don't think anyone's ever going to watch my talk if I submit a talk to some 200 session virtual event, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't think it's a particularly effective marketing channel. And so I think what you have to look for, again, are those curated platforms, are those, you know, plant a flag for quality. That's been a theme for throughout my entire career. How can you plant a flag for quality? Yeah. And so many virtual events are cropping up right now, and I'm not sure that they're good for the freenoter.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think one of the models that's really interesting, and I'd say two friends, clients, fellow speakers that have done something very interesting with this, first one, Michelle Poehler, and the second, Judy Holler. I've seen them both do this now. Judy Holler, by the time this will come out, she will have already done it. But both of them have been offering their keynote to their platform as a paid live-only event. Hmm. And what I think that's really interesting to me for a couple of reasons. Well, first thing is that both of them have already done the work, and this is important, building their platform. In this case, both of them have built a substantial following and platform on Instagram, so they have a built-in audience that's looking for them. Second, that built-in audience on Instagram usually is not in a place where they could see them live when they spoke live. That, you know, the people who would bring them in to hire were not the people who hired and followed them on Instagram. And so what I find really interesting about this model that both Michelle and Judy have followed is that they've really found a way to leverage this audience that they already have. And understanding this audience doesn't normally get to see them live, they're saying, hey, I'm going to do this live, and I'm not giving you a replay. Meaning, you have to be there.
Yeah, I love that.
I do too. And I think one of the things that's what Judy's doing that's very interesting, and I'm going to sign up, and we'll report in next time, you know, or try to remember to report in next time we record an episode. But she's also doing it with an MC who happens to be Aaron King, who I mentioned earlier, and a DJ. So she's trying to, like, create, you know, a really special event for her folks. And I think we're going to see all sorts of different models for how you adapt your content. Because sometimes, yeah, it's going to be actually the content itself. It's going to be, we've talked so far about the topic. We've talked about the time as a way to do it. And I think that there's an opportunity to really adapt the channel and the kind of whole event experience around it as yet another way to adapt your content.
Yeah, and I'm actually planning a virtual event of my own, and I'm also getting an MC and a DJ, and I've gotten DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Have you?
You might remember as Will Smith's.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And for an MC, I've got MC Scat Cat.
That Paula Abdul
from he was the animated cat.
Yeah.
From the great Paula Abdul video for Opposites Attract. So MC Scat Cat and DJ Jazzy Jeff and Edison Research.
I think you might be overpromising here, but...
No.
No.
All right,
no.
I have one more question for you, and it's a question that's going to lead into our real hero of public speaking.
Yes.
And it's kind of the money question, which a lot of our friends have been grappling with.
Okay, no pressure.
you have some content. You no longer have a stage.
Yeah.
Do you wedge what you have into a virtual setting, or do you rethink what you have? Do you repurpose, or do you rethink?
Oh, I think it's a combination. Classic consultant answer. Because what we have talked about is actually what we've already talked about actually is a combination of both of those things. You know, I think that what won't work well is just thinking you can take what worked well live and make it virtual. Right? I don't think you can do that. There's a totally different experience. The environment that your audience is sitting in is very, very different. I forget which one of our colleagues pointed this out, so it's not mine. I'm sorry, I can't give proper attribution, but that, you know, when you're speaking live on a stage, you're usually up, like, you're up, you're distant. But when somebody's watching you online, typically, except in the cases of, you know, some folks like we're going to talk about with our real hero of speaking, you're generally looking at them the way, you know, you look on the screen the same way they look to you, which is like you're centered on the screen and you're a certain size. They're actually looking at you eye to eye. And so for that, in that way, I don't think you can just straight repurpose your content.
Right.
So I think that, but there are going to be elements of what you talk about that you can repurpose. So to the point we were talking about earlier, you can probably find ways, it's going to take a little bit of work, but to take your 60-minute keynote and break it into 3 20-minute sections. I think you can do that. That's repurposing, right? But it also means rethinking how you present it. It means taking what was a one and done kind of thing and repurposing the content, but rethinking it as a program. It's about this is something I always worked on and suggested to my clients, but really taking your content and thinking about, to your lazy river analogy, how one thing can lead to another. So for instance, you know, one of the things that I've been doing since all of this started was I developed a new talk on pressure testing your message. Like, what are the bars your message has to meet in order to survive in an environment like we have right now? And where it leads to is kind of saying, hey, the most important thing you can do is build a case for your idea. It's something I talk about a lot. And that leads directly into another piece of content I have that can be, you know, 20 minutes, whatever, around how do you build that case? So I think it is a combination of repurposing what you have, but rethinking not only the experience from the audience perspective, but rethinking how it can work together to serve as an effective funnel for you and the business that you're doing all this freenoting for.
So I'm gonna admit something here, and I think
I wish we had some confessional music, but I don't think that exists.
I can go back to.
Oh, back
to the COVID cabana. I'm not sure this works. I'm not sure this works.
That's all right.
But I'm gonna use it.
Yeah.
I did something on the last webinar that I did for Edison that I do not do from the stage.
What's that?
I spent a minute at the end of the webinar talking about the product from which the data was derived and how you can buy it. And I don't do that from the stage, because that's sort of like peeing where you eat or something like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we actually had a question from one of our listeners about that, who was asking us, saying, you know, hey, when you're in a live event, like we've talked in the past about how there's kind of a really two categories. People are in a learning mode or in an acting mode. And that when they go to a conference, they're usually in learning mode, which is why if you give them a pitch from the stage, it doesn't land. And so her question was, what do you do? Like, she was kind of frustrated by so many webinars seemed to be a pitch right from the get-go. So what was the deal with that? And, you know, my answer to her was, well, you know, yes, it's a stylistic choice. And generally, the culture around webinars has grown up that if you don't pay for it, then kind of the classic thing, then yeah, it's kind of like a timeshare pitch. You know, like if you sign up for this webinar, it's totally free. There's kind of an understanding that it's leading somewhere. But You know, I think that there's a like with freenoting, I think the same rules apply. I mean, I think you can talk about the work that you've done with clients. You can talk about how it references. You can talk about a next step. You can give them the tool for the next step, right, and make it clear that you work with folks. You know, I think different people are going to be comfortable with a different level of a specific ask at the end of this. But that's another way to adapt your content.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more comfortable with not an outright sales pitch, but at least saying, you know, hey, you know, this data came from this product that we do, and we sell this, and you can learn more about this here. I don't do that on stage at, you know, a marketing conference or something like that.
Yeah.
But at a marketing conference, they didn't come to the conference for me. They came there to, you know, to get plowed at the bar, to bring back some stuff for work, to see Alec Baldwin. You know, like they came for many, many different reasons. But when they come to my webinar,
they came for you.
They came for me. And so yeah. I feel like I can take a 30-second liberty there. So.
Yeah. I think your mileage may vary, but I think that's an important point.
But speaking of adapting your content to fit the new kind of virtual world, I don't know that anybody has done that as well as Vin Jiang.
So Vin is amazing. And so let's just have like a pause for a moment to say that this is a man, a speaker, a performer
100%.
Who puts in the work like very few people I have ever seen. And some of that comes from his background as a magician, because you know you love magic, but like you can't be a great magician without really, really thinking about performance. And so Vin has spent, you know, his career as a magician and then as a keynote speaker, where he brings in his magic, thinking constantly about performance. So now, well, all of a sudden, these live stages go away. Like, what does that mean for performance? And what's interesting about Vin is that he was always very, very savvy to the power of video. So, you know, concurrent with his work in magic, and particularly when he started really making a hard move into keynote speaking, he also made at that time a really hard pivot into video. So he already had a bit of an appreciation for that. But it's been really fascinating to see how he has taken what he does from a live stage and start to move it to a virtual one.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's the kind of technical things that he's done. I mean, he's essentially built a TV studio.
Yeah.
But he has indeed adapted his content to, you know, to this kind of new reality that we're all in.
Yeah, and what I find interesting, so, you know, full disclosure, he and I worked on a talk now that I have seen him both deliver live and virtually. And to the point I was making earlier, like it was already a fairly tactical talk, which to all the folks, you know, sometimes they get people who come to me and say, well, I'm really strong in content, but I want to be a keynote speaker. I'm like, these are not mutually exclusive things. And Vin's a great example of that, because, you know, the talk that I've seen him give now in both directions is really based on performance and communication skills. It's very content forward, but Vin being the performer that he is, it's also, he shows and tells. He does what he is telling people to do. And that is what's so beautiful. So the fact that he's so, there's such alignment there, there's such congruency there between who he is and what he talks about. First and foremost, if there is any other lesson to take away from all of this, it's that. Like, that's what helps you adapt content, is that you are already operating from a position of strength, because who you are and what you do and what you talk about is already, and how, is already completely aligned. From there, though, what's been interesting about seeing how he's adapted it is just for him, it's been largely a technical solution, because he already had content that worked, you know, tactically, interactively. You know, he already did, you know, magical effects for folks. He already had things that he demonstrated on stage. And so for him, a lot of the adjustment really was technical. Like, he's, as you say, he built essentially a TV studio in his garage. He's got a 3-camera shoot. He's got this, like electric flip chart thing that replaces what he used a physical flip chart for on stage. But as a performer, he had a lot of these skills already built up, how to engage the audience, how to ask certain questions. I mean, one of the things that I loved about seeing him do this was that he actually makes it super easy for people to answer his questions in chat. So, you know, I a lot of times, so it gave me an idea, right? You know, a lot of times I ask questions in chat, which now that I think about it, make people tap a lot. Like they have to type a lot of things. But he was just basically saying, type this letter if it's this, like, you know, he was, yeah. And I thought that was really brilliant.
So here's the advantage that Vin has that so many speakers don't, that magic is often performed on three different stages. Hmm. And you know this because you've been to the Magic Castle with me, like,
that's correct,
seven times
and
or something
I love
like that.
You. Yes.
And at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, you see magic performed on three different stages. There's the close-up gallery. There's 24 people in there, a little table. You know, you can touch the performer, yeah, basically. There's the parlor, and you'll see things that you could see, you know, 10 rows back.
Yeah.
You could still see the magic.
Between 5 and 20 feet, I'd say, yeah?
And then there's the stage show, which is, you know,
David Copperfield.
Well, but here's the thing, and I want to come back to this, but David Copperfield, and I've seen David Copperfield, I think, six times, as you know. And like for many, many years, I've gone to see David Copperfield. He does a trick on stage. It's a variant of a trick called Grandfather's Aces or Macomb's Aces. And it's a four-ace assembly trick where you show the aces to be in different places, and then all of a sudden they're all in one place. Mm. Like if you were in person, that would work about 5 feet away, and then it would stop working. He does that on stage in front of thousands of people. Part of it is a tech solution, but the other part of it is that he puts a wrapper around it that makes it more meaningful to people. It's not just an ace assembly. It's a story.
Yeah.
And even if you didn't quite catch this or that, the story kind of matters, right?
And that brings us back to Dickens. I love, by the way, I love this analogy, and I think this is such, I haven't thought about it this way. I think this is such a useful way for people who are trying to adapt their content to virtual to think about it, thinking, you know, it didn't occur to me. I don't think it's a straight match for Vin, but Vin definitely has a three camera shoot where there's a kind of, yeah, there's an equivalent of a close up. There's something that's a little bit broader. I don't think his parlor shot is quite an analog as we're talking about. But I think that's a really interesting way to think about it. And I think we need to acknowledge that for people who are like, oh my gosh, I don't have a garage to set up this. I don't have three cameras to set up a shoot. What else can you do? And for this, I can tell you that in our 675 square feet,
giant,
in the 18th floor of a
tiny house in the sky,
our tiny house in the sky in Boston, that there are ways to duplicate a very similar effect. Now, I can't get a full three camera shoot necessarily happening, you know, at our dining table where we also record this podcast, but I can do certain things that are different. And so, you know, one of those, which is inspired by Brant Mensah, who we already mentioned, one of the things that he's been experimenting with is a second camera that allows him to draw on a pad of paper, like next to him. And another of our friends, Mark Pittman, found a tool that was being marketed to teachers called Teach on Tech, which is this kind of like PVC pipe solution where you can put your phone or your iPad on top over, and it'll aim the camera down onto a table. And so I was like, that's amazing, because I think that it was A, inexpensive, and B, like, I love working on a flip chart. That's like my Weight Watcher leader coming out. And so I got that. And so on a webinar I was doing yesterday, is the one I mentioned earlier, storyboarding one, I basically just hot swapped. I mean, I don't have any of the fancy stuff that anybody has right now. I don't have like Ecamm. I don't have Stream Deck. I don't have any of the buttons and whatever. I literally have a 3-year-old bottom of the line MacBook Pro that can't even handle like Ecamm pushing to anything else. Like I literally can only deal with Zoom. And I just did a hot swap. Like I hot swapped like what the feed was. I was like, hey, just hold on a minute. I'm going to swap over to this thing. Swapped over to what would be the close-up shot of the work that I was doing, and then kind of went back to something else. So there are, like, that we can take inspiration from people like Vin, and then we can use the constraints that we're working within to get really creative about how you can do something like that for you within your resources that help you achieve a similar effect.
Well, and here's the thing that I wanted to come back to about what Vin does and about a magician's sensibility, right? If I have, if I do the three card Monty, like you've seen that, right?
And Vin does that in this talk we were talking about. Yeah.
Like that's a thing that you do intimately.
Yeah.
In front of, under people's noses. You know, if I do the linking rings, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen the linking rings, the solid steel rings that, you know, that doesn't work great under your nose, but it works good from a slight distance, right? Yeah. But then if you do the classic zigzag illusion where you put someone in three stacked boxes and you shove some blades in there and pull the boxes apart and all that, that's not going to work an inch from your nose. It's going to work, right? And I think Vin has that knowledge and sensibility that the zigzag illusion is what I did on stage, and now I have to do three card Monty. And that's the analogy, I think, that any keynoter and freenoter has to think about. What's the three card Monty bit that you do? What's the zigzag, you know, illusion that you do? And some of that's down to storytelling and intimacy, but it's also just an acknowledgement about what material you have that works best when there's a crowd reaction.
Yep.
And what material you have that works well without a crowd reaction.
Yeah, because that's a great point. Because a fascinating thing watching Vin work and do this presentation without audible crowd reaction, which was how he was asking for a reaction that he could react to. And I think that's an important thing. So another way to adapt your content is how you use the tech, right? So, you know, for folks that, you know, Zoom is the dominant one right now.
Yeah.
And there's a real choice about whether or not when you're setting up something that's your own event, you set it up as a webinar, which is going to put everyone silent and you're not going to be able to see them, or as a Zoom call where you can unmute them much more easily. You can see them. You can put them into breakout rooms. It's a different experience. And so, again, it's a different – think about what you do and what works well for you, and feel free to adapt that tech. You know, my speaking chops were from all the years I spent as a Weight Watchers leader. And that was, guess what? 20 minutes of content plus a lot of interaction, Q&A, like we were talking about last time.
That was parlor magic.
It was parlor magic, absolutely. And so that's really one of the things that I've been thinking about more and more is how can I make my virtual experience as much like that Weight Watcher meeting as possible? And if I go back and think to that, well, yeah, that's one of the reasons why I wanted that Teach on Tech solution, because I use the flip chart all the time in that environment. And so, you know, with a couple experiments I was doing this week, not only with that webinar, but also with my mastermind group, the one that I lead, that just having that ability to draw something live was really empowering. And it ended up being one of the most, for that mastermind group, one of the most interactive, most Weight Watcher meeting-like experiences that I'd had as a speaker in a really long time. So think back to what you know, what works well for you. And instead of trying to adapt yourself to the tech, think about how can you adapt the tech to what your strengths are. There isn't one way to do this right now. There isn't one way to make it right. People are going to respond to different experiences. Some people really want that really fancy whiz-bang, you know, overlays on all the stuff. And other people really just want to talk to you. And so if you're really good with the whiz-bang, then do the whiz-bang. You're going to get the whiz-bang people. And if you're really good at just talking to people and answering their questions, do that. Because that's what it all comes down to anyway.
I'm not really good at the whiz bang, I have to say. Do you know what I am really good at?
What are you really good at? Oh, I know. Cocktails.
I am. So this week, just really quickly, because it's hotted up here in Boston.
It is hotted up.
And it's a great time. It's a great time to have a mojito.
Oh my God. They're such a good drink.
Mojito is a great drink.
It's just a lovely. Yeah. I mean, you got to be careful with them because they're super drinkable.
Yeah, they are. So I'm going to give you the mojito recipe, the classic one. You take a bunch of mint leaves and about a tablespoon.
Fresh, by the way.
Fresh, yeah, not dried. Good Lord.
Ugh.
Philistines.
Yeah.
Yeah, take some fresh mint leaves and a tablespoon of simple syrup, and you muddle that. You kind of crush that in a glass. And once you get out all the leaves bruised and all the mint oil in the simple syrup, you fill the glass with ice. It's a long glass, so you want a tall glass for this. An ounce and a half of rum, and then you fill it with soda water. But our twist on this, and we discovered this on a vacation to Antigua, is to use dark rum.
Oh, this dark rum mojito is so good.
I know. Like 90% of the mojitos, when you order a mojito in a bar, you're going to get like, you know, Captain Morgan. See-through.
I know.
But dark rum, English Harbor rum from Antigua.
Yeah, so good.
Oh, my goodness.
And we benefit here in the Boston area from, we have a local distillery called Privateer that makes amazing
yeah.
both light rum and dark rum. And so we are very spoiled in our ability to make a delicious mojito no matter which direction we go. But, you know, it's just it's a lovely sip and drink. You know, it's kind of,
sure,
you know, we missed the Kentucky Derby. Well, everybody did. But it, you know, it's very much in that spirit of a julep, but, it's a lovely, refreshing drink.
And this has been a lovely, refreshing show.
Because you're lovely and refreshing.
Oh, my great love. No, this has been a great show. And I have to tell you, we're going to do something special in the next show.
Tell me.
I'm going to tell you on the next episode of The Freenoter, we're going to break the format.
What?
We're going to do a shoot around, as they say in the NBA, with a whole bunch of our favorite keynoters and freenoters to hear in their own words how they've pivoted or adapted their speaking with no in-person events.
And in the spirit of, well, spirits, we'll ask some of our favorite speakers what their favorite cocktails are and how they like to enjoy them.
All in the next episode of The Freenoter. Cheers.
Cheers.